Hey, Phil here. Before we get into the episode, I just wanted to hop in real quick and let you know that this episode of the 70% Complete podcast was recorded for video. I think the episode still stands as audio only, but you will need to do a little bit of conjuring in your mind to get the full effect. Okay, now, back to what you're really here for. The tangents.
I'm just going to hit start record again.
Yep, me too.
Because I will forget to otherwise. I should probably turn up that compressor even a little more. We'll talk about it.
A bit of a gear thing to explain to you real quick. I can see your mouse cursor.
Yeah.
When you wiggle it, I can see it.
Yeah.
That's fine. Just telling
you. You're not getting OBS's output. You're getting a screen share of the detached projector preview. So. Perfect.
All right. That makes sense.
It's probably not in the record. No, my only input in OBS right now is the webcam and the microphone. So.
Webcam and microphone. Okay. Cool.
I'm not capturing screens in any way.
Yeah.
All right. What the fuck were we doing?
We're going to do the gear episode.
Oh, yeah, maybe our after dark segments here are just going to be about meta bullshit.
I like it.
Microphones. So microphones are hard for a lot of reasons. Analog, I mean, we're doing analog to digital. Okay. How do you pick a microphone?
I look at the wire cutter that says top five microphones to use when you want to start a podcast. What I did, you see what kind of microphone your company will pay to reimburse for, and then you buy that one.
That's, look, if that option is open to you, that is the best microphone that someone else can buy for you.
A free microphone?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way to go if you can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, microphones are complicated. Like, we can look at frequency curves and stuff, but audio is complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Audio is a giant pain in the ass. And it changes every day. Like every time you step in front of that microphone, you're going to sound a little different and you're going to be at a slightly different volume. And like the fucking humidity's different and who the hell knows what else is going to affect this thing. The way your voice interacts with the frequency response of a microphone is kind of unknowable until you do all of the things.
Sure.
Like, different people sound different on different microphones because different microphones pick up different things. And then, should we talk about how microphones work? Like, you got your little diaphragm moving back and forth. So you have a thin piece of, well, there's a couple different ways microphones can work. A lot of the time, you have a diaphragm, you have a thin thing, and you have an electromagnet. And as that thing moves, the electromagnet turns it into electrical signals. Which is the inverse of a speaker. A speaker does the same thing, just going the other direction. That's why it's got that cone and that big fuck off magnet on the back of it.
Yeah.
Same thing happening in reverse.
Okay. Never once thought about that.
Yeah. The way the diaphragm interacts with the electromagnet determines which parts of the audio spectrum it's going to pick up on. And then you're going to run that through maybe nothing, or maybe a shitload of boxes like I have on the desk over here.
Yeah.
But a microphone that I sound good on might not sound good with your voice. Or if you have a very deep voice, it's going to be entirely different than this. So it's kind of hard to know what a good microphone is.
Yeah.
Because a good microphone for you might be a bad microphone. Like the microphone that makes you sound the best might be like holistically kind of shit.
Yeah.
But it's really good for you in your space. And like, we even talked about reflections, and like, I'm in front of these monitors, which is horrific. So I need something a little more directional, and I do a bad job of microphone placement. Not because I can't do a good job, but because I move everywhere constantly. Yeah. My mic discipline's shit. I stand.
Also like the mic.
You're lucky I'm not pacing.
But we talked off mic here about you getting a stick mic to just walk around. So yeah, like, you could do it.
I could do that. I should probably do that. I probably will do that. Speaking run of the show, we were gonna go through all the microphones I've collected lately. So I'm building a microphone library of sorts. Mm-hmm. Because the only way to know is to A/B test some things. And also Nick does a lot of music stuff. And Nick has, I feel like Nick has more hang ups about spending money on gear than I do.
That's probably true. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's almost certainly right. So, but that means I can use that to convince myself to buy more microphones so I can share with Nick.
Sharing's caring.
That's all I was getting to. Yeah. Like, he's usually correct. Like, that's probably a pretty good place to start from. And I think it's not wrong in this case either.
Yeah.
I started with a Blue Yeti. Did I record any of this on? Yeah, we were recording some stuff when I was still on that.
Yeah,
I broke two of those.
Oh, yes, I remember the saga of breaking them. Yep.
Yeah, so you've got... Who are we recording this for? I guess we haven't talked about, like... Let's get super meta. Who's the audience for this? Is this for other people who are at our level of internet production who maybe want to know slightly more about microphones? Or is this some other thing?
I think, yes, audio-wise. You are currently in a backdrop with two softboxes on you, and there are bisexual lighting behind you. I think you might be a little bit more production-wise in the video space.
I have more gear.
Yes.
But I don't know. I don't know if I would say I'm better at anything.
No, I wouldn't say better. But you have a microphone library, and I do feel like that is a certain level of pervert that people listening to this might not be.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is because of like my experience doing live audio in theater, and I missed very specific thin portions of that experience. I can replicate a lot of those thusly. You know what's really great is being able to change the color of a light without cutting a bunch of fucking gel.
Yep.
I don't miss cutting gel.
Okay,
yeah, let's just do some tech stuff. We have a group of people who also make things and are probably similarly situated in terms of knowledge base, which is limited, at least mine is. So microphones we were talking about, the trying to find the right microphone for you is not like doable without testing out a lot of different microphones. And it's hard to do that unless you own a lot of microphones, or you know someone who owns a lot of microphones, or you're willing to like buy and return a lot of microphones. And I don't return things.
No, not for this, good this reasons. Is, no, you just simply don't.
I don't. You can't. I mean, you can make me. I have a couple things that I will maybe return. We'll see. not microphones. Those are mine. Yeah. Spill over from spending too long working retail, I think, to some degree. Yeah. Plus, like, that word fell out of my head, which is very funny. Executive function. There we go. Yep. That's what I was looking for. Frequently am I looking for executive function. about microphones. Okay, so this thing in front of me is a Shure M7X, M7 Plus, M...
X, I think. Let me...
It doesn't have USB. It's only... So they've made a couple different of these. This is, like... I don't know if I would recommend going this route anymore or not. I bought this
M7X is the XLR.
Is the base? Okay, yeah. I think there's an M7X Plus and...
The M,
maybe a C.
The MV7
there's one with RGB plus. In it now.
That's the one. 7 Plus has okay. The RGB.
You don't need that. It has RGB and it has Type-C, which is fine for some things. So...
It's also $100 more than the 7X.
Yeah. Yeah, don't get RGB in a microphone.
Doesn't seem like it would
don't
be a good
do
idea.
That. Yeah, microphones should be unitaskers. Which is part of the part of my hang up with USB microphones. So we just we just talked about how diaphragms work, kind of. So you're getting an electrical signal from that, but that's still an analog electrical signal. Like, that's not what the computer understands, which is zeros and ones.
Yeah,
we have to turn the analog signal into zeros and ones. That's a digital analog converter, or analog digital converter, I guess, in this case. So for your microphone, you are using a Yeti, like I have destroyed multiple times.
Yep.
And that does that inside before it leaves. Where an XLR microphone, you need another doodad to do that part. So that's part of the difference there. Like, your microphone is fine.
Yeah.
I have no complaints about the Yeti, other than the way I had it set up. I just kept ripping the cord out of the bottom of it, which turns out bad.
They don't like it. Yeah, I mean, I can't really... turn my monitoring headphone jack too much without it crackling and only working in half of my headphones. So
yeah,
she's a delicate beast.
Yeah, and that seems to be part of. I don't know if that's part of the Yeti or. I don't know if it's actually that fragile. I was not kind to mine, so I started with a broadcast arm. Also, I guess let's maybe talk about that too. Is leaving it up all the time. Caused me to rip that cable out a bunch of times without realizing it. So now I have a mic stand. This gravity stand.
That's
so
on the
if
floor,
you're gonna go,
right?
This is on the floor. Yeah, because I'm standing. I stand for all of our episodes. I walk. If I'm on the phone, I am walking. It's amazing that I can stand here and do this to me.
Amazing. Okay.
Yeah. So gravity stands. Okay, so gravity stands aren't the most durable. They're very expensive for what they are. I got this one used for a really good price, which you're going to hear me say frequently. A lot of my stuff I buy used for a lot of reasons. Before I had this one, I was using a tripod boom stand kind of thing, where it's got little legs, and that didn't have quite the stability. This thing's freaking heavy.
Yeah, it's rock solid.
But it's not like, in my limited experience, gravity stands are not particularly roadworthy. So if you were throwing it in the back of a truck frequently, maybe don't go that route.
Maybe don't.
Yeah, but if you're just going to set it up and put it in a corner when you're done, I think they're great. But they are expensive, more expensive than they need to be.
Yeah, I had I had one of those that was just, it was a desktop one, and that just would get picked up, moved right over there when I was done with it.
I should tear this down every time, and I don't. I fold it up real nice, and I tuck it in the corner, which is better than the boom arm that I was, or the broadcast arm before.
Yeah.
So your setup is pretty simple. You are just Yeti, USB... Into the machine, either your DAW or Audacity or OBS, whatever software you're using. I currently run from this microphone to, what's the staging on this?
Gotta check your staging.
Let me look. I think I go for the mute button first.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the mute button's really just like an attenuator. It's not like actually muting the signal. It's just dropping it by like 40 decibels or something. And then that runs into a DBX286S, which is a preamp and a processor combo. So it has a microphone preamp. It has a de-esser, a noise gate, and a compressor. Something else. Enhancer.
What do each of those do?
I'm not, like, the enhancers kind of does some fucking magic to try to make you sound better. So I don't use it because I don't understand it.
Yep.
And I want to twist the knobs myself, damn it.
Yep.
A gate.
That's why he bought the rack-mounted thing.
Yeah, that's why I buy rack-mounted everything. So a gate is important. That's going to set a floor where any sounds less loud than that will no longer be transmitted.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to pick how loud something has to be before it gets into the mic. That's going to be dependent on your gate, but it's also going to be dependent on your microphone and its placement and its off-axis rejection, which I guess we can talk about, like your cardioid, supercardioid,
which would be shotgun, if I'm trying to talk like this and you can't.
Trying to talk like that. Yeah, once you get, or behind it, ideally. So, like,
yeah,
the reason you need off-axis rejection, especially here, is, like, I'm getting reflections from my monitors.
Right.
And yeah, so I could use some sound treatment. That would probably help a lot. I don't know if I'm going to get that far. We'll see. A preamp is going to take the signal you have and amplify it in some way. Mm-hmm. So again, we're talking electrical signals. So all of this comes back to like volts and amps and current.
Yep.
Depending on the microphone, you may or may not need a preamp. Dynamic microphones typically don't. So like a Shure SM58, you're fine. Just plug that thing in, away you go. In fact, if you were looking to switch to XLR and you don't want to think about shit real hard, just put a 57 or a 58 in front of your face and call it a day. It's like $100. They're great. You can get them used too for cheap and they're pretty stable. Before I was using a Cloudlifter as a preamp, which I probably wouldn't recommend for anyone in our space. I bought that because I needed a preamp and I didn't want to have to think about it or research it at the time. And that one is going to do the thing it says it's going to do.
Yeah.
And it's durable and but it's expensive. They're like $150.
Okay.
Now that it's built into the DBX, I could still use that. I've thought about it, I guess. I could run from the mic into the Cloudlifter, into the vocal processor, and basically turn off the preamp in the vocal processor. I don't know. I opted to have less things in the chain.
Yeah, that seems like the way I would go.
So different preamps are going to have different characteristics. They're going to, like, the Cloudlifter just gives you, like, a flat 25 decibels. I don't know, something like that. It just says, whatever this signal is, now it's up here. Done. Yep. But the way it does that also matters. Like, the circuitry that makes that happen can affect your sound, which is why microphone preamps are, like, maybe $30. Maybe $3,000, maybe more.
Okay. Yeah.
Depending on if like, are there tubes in there? Is it fat? Like what are the bits? What make it loud?
Yeah.
Determines the cost. And it also determines what that output is. Cause it's not going to be a perfect one-to-one representation. So you'll hear people use words like warmth very frequently with audio and with preamps, and tubes. So part of me is like, oh, maybe that's just a cleaner preamp. Maybe that's going to give me a better signal if I use the Cloudlifter instead of the one built into this thing.
Yeah.
I haven't done the testing yet. I don't know. We're going to figure it out because eventually we're going to plug all these microphones in one of these days and just see, maybe this is the best one for me to be using. I don't know. It's no longer the most expensive microphone I own. I know that. So it's probably, yeah, right. but it's the one that is still on the stand.
Yeah.
When we go to record. So I put it in front of my face.
I was going to mention that, after all of this about how they can sound different and everything, the microphone that you do have in front of your face is the probably most stereotypical podcast microphone at this point. Like, I don't think that you can have a mainstream podcast without one of those in your face, unless it glows in the dark.
This is not one of those. This is...
Oh, so, right.
Good. I'm glad we got there. So this is the baby version of one of those. Maybe I'll just I guess I can just hold it up. Okay. So what you are talking about is a Shure SM7B. Yeah.
It's got silly thing on it.
Yeah, the 7B, this piece is chunkier, the yoke's a little different, and it's got a thin little cord that comes out, and the XLR jack is like down here.
Yep.
Instead of into the microphone itself.
Yep.
That is an old ass design. That microphone has been around for like 40, I don't know, maybe longer. A lot of years.
Yeah.
It's used for rock and metal vocals. It's used for broadcast. It is a warm microphone. It's got some extra low end to it. This is the like knockoff version. Still made by Shure, the same company, but this is marketed at people who don't want to spend 7B prices. So an SM7B is, gosh, I don't know how much that is now, actually. $450?
Yep. Yeah, $440.
Okay. And it needs a preamp. That is a gain-hungry microphone. That thing does not typically do great. You can make it work without one in certain settings. If you don't want to fiddle a shit forever, you probably want a preamp for it. So they sell one now with one built in. It's $550. SM7B Plus, I think. Maybe.
But then you're locked in with what they have.
And you're locked into the preamp that's built into the thing. And now if the preamp fails, the mic fails. Similar to like our modem router discussions in the past. I like discrete unitaskers for these sorts of things. It's a really good microphone for a lot of things. It might not be for you, though, is the other thing. Also, it's crazy expensive. And with a lot of things, you're going to get diminishing returns. Like, is that five times better than a $100 microphone? No.
Probably not. Yeah.
No. No, it's not. I feel comfortable saying no. I've listened to a lot of things. You're going to be way better off with like some sound treatment and better microphone discipline than you are with going from this to that.
Yeah. Just kind of the same as cameras, right? Like at some point, like what you need to work on is your framing and lighting technique more than the actual camera.
Exactly. So yeah, I wouldn't go that route. Okay. There are reasons to go to an SM7B, and you've mentioned them already. And that is primarily aesthetics. It is a visual communication that you have spent a lot of money on a microphone. I don't want to, like, that can be important depending on what you are trying to accomplish, who your audience is, what you expect your audience to look for.
Yeah.
And so that's been, we've been trending that direction for a while. I think we have crossed the zenith of peak SM7B though, because I'm starting to see RE20s popping up with CNC much higher our Electro Voice RE20. I'm going to show you a slightly different version of that in a minute. I got it on the floor over here. I should be using the 320 that I have, which we'll talk about in a moment here. But the EV RE20 is kind of like in the same camp. It's a different microphone, but it's kind of in a similar price point to the 7B. It is a broadcast style microphone. Electro Voice and some of their higher end ones uses, do they call it variable D technology?
I have no idea.
Which is supposed to deal with some proximity effect better, and it's their claim is that the poor mic discipline that you see me constantly demonstrate will be less affected by the way they have designed this microphone. And that it should pick up your voice relatively similar if you're kind of doing this sort of thing. But that one I'm seeing more often in podcasts and YouTube videos lately. I think like the 7B got popular enough that it became tired visually.
It's not counterculture to have a cool microphone anymore.
Well, it used to be like, oh, you spent a lot of money on microphones and you know what this microphone is and you were producing good audio. And eventually it became the baseline recommendation was if you have money to throw at the thing, get a Cloud Lifter, get a 7B, move on with your life.
Yep.
Because that's not going to be like wrong. You're not going to get, well, you can still get bad audio out of it, but it's your fault. You're not going to have to blame the gear for your bad audio. You probably will, but you'll be wrong. So you'll see both of those. And this, I'll just grab the 320. I picked up a 320 a while ago, which I also got used.
There is a mythical price point that you haven't broken yet, I think. And I'm pretty sure is it 300?
I don't know if I spent more than 300 on this. I don't think so. No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah. I have not. I mean, I'm not saying I won't, but I have not yet.
Okay.
This guy.
Yeah, look at that thing.
So here's that is. I'll just lift this up so it's in frame. It's probably better audio anyway.
I forgot it was on a stand.
Yeah. So you'll see this grill style in addition to the 7B. So the 7B it typically handles plosives a little better than this. Like, I should probably have a pop filter for this thing anyway, but we can take the foam off of here, and now it just looks like a dumb cheap microphone.
Yeah, that's really funny.
Yeah. So, and the material this thing is made out of matters considerably. Like, I could put a better pop filter, a better foam version of this on here and probably do better. But that diaphragm is like in here somewhere, and the 7B recesses that diaphragm even further.
Okay.
And it has a big, better foam pop filter. I don't remember if these are actually called, probably a windscreen, I guess. Built into it. So it's going to reject plosives, which are your when air's hitting that diaphragm and moving it because of the air you're pushing out, not because of the voice that you're making.
Yep.
Where were we?
The grills.
Oh yeah, that's how you're like visually identifying them. So you'll see a lot of them like this. The RD20 has a very similar grill to this. You'll also see knockoffs have really started to latch onto this design. Where did that cheap one go? Ah.
Oh boy. I will say this to the listener. He still has not told us how many microphones there are. And with all of this preamble about the fancy ones he has and about how he hasn't tried them yet, I am quite concerned about the amount of microphones that are hiding behind this black cover here.
There's a lot, man.
Yeah. you don't call it a library. Like, I don't call my bookshelf over here that has about 15 books on it a library.
You should.
I mean, I should.
You should get more books, too.
I should get more books. Has me very concerned about how many microphones you need to have to consider it a library.
I don't have that many yet, but I'm not done. So this thing is made by 512 Audio. I've not used this yet. I've made sure all of these make noise, but I've not sat down and like tried to dial in and see what I sound like. And the amount of my own voice I'm going to have to listen to do that is also going to be irritating. And I just need to get over that now. But you can see
those are pretty similar.
Inspired, we'll say.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think I got this one on sale for like $50.
Okay.
Less than that. 30. I think I got this on sale for 30.
Jeez.
And this was more.
More.
And it's heavier. But this thing's still pretty heavy, so I'm kind of interested. Maybe we'll do some A-Bs with these. Yeah,
comparison there.
Yeah, and I have two of these now, too. I don't know if it's good, but I got it. It went on sale more, and there was a used one, so I think it was $14 is what I paid for it.
Okay.
And there's some dumb stuff you can do with two microphones also. Okay. And sometimes, I don't know.
I mean, sometimes you got to get two. I get it. Also, if I saw a microphone cost was for low. $14, yeah, like...
I
would do it.
They're normally, like, their regular price is significantly higher. I don't think their regular price is maybe indicative of what the quality is, but we'll find out. That was kind of my point, is like, this was considerably more expensive than this.
Yeah.
There's a non-zero chance I will sound better coming through this cheap one than I do coming through this one. Which is like kind of a bummer. It's nice when you can, we have not lived in this world for a while, but it's nice when you can buy a thing and be like, oh, this is expensive, so it's probably good.
Yeah. And for that, the reason that it is not good is specifically not because it is poorly made or not worth the price that you paid for it, but simply because the biology of your body means that it does not sound as good.
Yeah,
it's truly like your own fault.
Yeah, you bought a really nice, very well-made shirt that's just like the shoulders aren't quite right, and it sits on you weird, and now you look like a half-melted candle, and it sucks. Okay, so yeah, we have the M7, which is what all of our stuff I've recorded on since 2 years ago, maybe more.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Quite like a while all ago. 70% stuff at least is on that.
Oh yeah. 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 Anything we've done that's worth listening to was probably, if that exists at all, was probably done on this microphone.
Yeah.
And I've had no issues with it. I think you can get a similar or better result than I do with this for cheaper than I spent on this, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that tracks.
But I will say the M7 seems very clean to me. I think... if you want a microphone with very little character, it does a good job of that. It does pretty, I don't have to fiddle with it much to get the sound out of it that I get out of it. So, which is what I was looking for when I bought it. That was the goal. Was like I want to get things
plug and play.
Yeah. Like you remember when Intel and Boeing used to be companies that made consistent products. It's kind of like that where you're just like, well, this Intel processor is more expensive, but I will not have to second guess this decision if I just fork over the extra 30% or whatever.
Like,
this is just going to do the thing and we're fine. Now, you know, we left that world behind.
We did.
Quite some time ago.
Yeah.
But what else do we have? Okay.
So far, we're at 4 microphones, I think.
I'm interested to see how you count this next one.
Oh, no. Is this a computer or is it a microphone?
No, it's another microphone. This one comes in a little attaché case.
Cute.
So this is MXL. They typically make... I wonder if they're doing knockoff stuff now. MXL stuff is usually on the lower end cost-wise. This one I also got used for very cheap. And this I got simply to bait Nick into coming over to fart around with audio stuff with me.
Okay.
These are still in the bags.
Oh, no. Wait, hang on. That was small, and they are in bags. Are these, like, drop-down shotgun mics? Are they lav
mics? Small diaphragm condensers.
Oh.
So these are still condenser microphones.
Yep.
But it's a little guy.
That's a...
And there's
that's a Star Wars thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are the decoder things for the Empire.
A lot that's of stuff you'll are. See in oh the little yeah, a lot of stuff you'll see in like early Star Wars, Star Trek is just like, oh, you done whacked a microphone with a screwdriver a couple of times and glued a thing to the top of it, huh? Yeah. Once you start to see those, you can't unsee them.
That's the thing that Luke shouts 3PO, where could he be, into.
Exactly. Yeah. So these, like, there are microphone techniques you can do with two microphones, either placed at specific distances from each other and pointing in the same direction, or off axis from each other as well. Okay. So I got these to fuck around with those mic techniques. I don't know if I'll ever use them. They are microphones.
They're really cool.
They are really cool looking. They come in that little case. They each had a little shock mount. I paid less than $50 total for all of that.
Amazing. Okay. I mean, listen, $50 for a nice attaché case. Little
windscreens.
Oh, that's fun.
The other thing is, like, if you don't mess them up, microphones last a very long time, and they typically hold their value very well. Like, a Shure SM58 has been within spitting distance of $100 our entire lives.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like the difference there is these, like the USB mics, not so much. I suspect that they deteriorate pretty quickly sometimes, or at least depreciate in value, because of
how they're not worth shit.
They're computers.
Well, and these, like, when they designed this and when they built this, the idea was that it was going to get put up and taken down in a studio constantly, or chucked in the back of a truck or an airplane 300 times a year.
Yep.
So it has to be durable, or it will be destroyed inside a week. Where the microphone you're using right now is meant to sit on your desk and just not be ripped apart like I do to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it does, it seems to do fine at that. But that's not how I live my life. I destroy things. So
most of the time unintentionally. Half of the time. Half the time unintentionally. Okay. So those count as two then, right? So we're up to six?
That's what I was wondering. Is that one or is that two? They're sold as a pair in one case. It counts as two.
Yeah, they're microphones. We're not counting purchases here. We're counting microphones.
I think this is the last one. I won't promise that. It's the last one I'm going to show you, at least.
That doesn't seem very committal.
It's not. So this guy, this is the one.
Oh.
This is probably what I should be using, but I'm very interested in this one as well. Okay. This is an AKG P220.
Okay.
It has a little higher maximum SPL, sound pressure level. So different microphones can handle different peaks of intensity.
Okay.
And I suppose eventually if you blow enough air at this thing, you'll just pop a hole through that diaphragm. So this one handles a little bit louder. But it also imparts a little more warmth, I think, than anything else I have. Although we will have to test that and find out.
Yeah.
It uses a slightly different diaphragm. It's got a pad on it. So we've got these little, I'm getting out of my light, we have these little toggle switches.
Oh, yep.
Slide back and forth. One of them is going to give you negative 20 decibels, and the other one's a bass roll-off. The other thing is all of the microphones we've looked at, except for the knockoff one, the thing I'm calling a knockoff one, these will all totally handle being on like a guitar cabinet or a drum kit or something similar just as well. Like the frequency response is correct. Part of this bass roll-off switch is for that. So that's my other reasoning is like, these are not like your SM7B or your RE20. You're not going to go mic a guitar cab with that. That's not how the frequency response curve. Yeah. It's not meant for that. Cause you get different frequencies out of a guitar or a bass or a kick drum. Right. Especially than you do out of a human voice. So you want different microphones for those applications. And the ones I have are all relatively universal and would go on an instrument without any issue.
Like even those, I guess, even the silver ones, right? Like
those are for that.
Would you use those for a voice?
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably not. Typically, small diaphragms you're not using for vocals. Usually, those are instrument mics.
Okay. But yeah, also, I guess that's like that a creative choice at times.
Yeah, and like so, you and I have done some live audio. So like those would go. I'd probably put that on like a fucking flute or a violin or something along those lines, and it would be pretty close. And you compare those to like the Beta 52A, the kick drum microphone that we used to use. It's made by Shure. It's like it's just a big boy. Like entirely different form factor, entirely different frequency response, different max SPL. Like all of the numbers are different, but it is technically a microphone. But if you put a Beta 52A on a piccolo, yeah. I don't know what would happen, but it wouldn't be what you wanted.
Yeah.
I guess. I think that's all of them.
So that's seven.
Do we get seven? I have, yeah. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 7.
7. Okay. I mean, that's... I got one, and hold on.
Oh, I didn't count my broken...
Yeti?
The broken Yetis? Two of them? I have two of them.
I mean, it's not functional.
One of them's definitely broken. The other one's mostly broken.
I actually have three microphones. So.
Oh, well, get out of here. Oh, yeah, you those little DJI guys, don't you?
I have four microphones. Oh, yeah. No.
You have more than half of what I do.
All right, so I have a different focus for mine. So I have this, the Blue Yeti that I talk out of.
Mm-hmm.
I have I don't remember what the model number is on it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have a shotgun mic somewhere, too. I forgot about that. Yeah,
the Rode Video Go, I think. This is a beautiful purchase. Most of my YouTube videos were filmed on this or were used for this. And then I made a switch a couple videos ago now, actually, where I use the Rode Wireless Go 2, I think is the model number on it. And that is the lav pack that I use. I have one receiver and one transmitter for that. And that's like a little lapel mic that I use. And that those is the for all like
rectangle guys, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
So those do those.
Great. I just fucking hate looking at them.
Oh, it's
entirely a me thing.
The little like lapel guy that pops up.
Yeah. Even more when there's a windscreen on it too.
Oh yeah. No, I would never.
They do great sound. They're good. If you're not like familiar with lav mics, they seem great. But in my head, I'm like, well, you use a lav mic because you don't want people to see the microphone.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that is part of the problem.
And that's an entirely a me like conception problem.
I think
exclusively.
I mean, I think that's also like the DJI ones that are like, they're basically the size of like a thing of Tic Tacs and they have like blinky lights on them.
That's the one I think of. Yeah.
Yeah. Like those to me say like, hello, I'm a professional content creator now. And like back to the, like using the SMB7, like SM7B, like it's the same kind of signaling. You're
communicating
thing to me.
Something visual.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Whereas like the ones that I use are just their actual like lav packs. And then it has a whole wired microphone that I use and you can see the little lapel guy, like I'm on the Daily News, but it's not quite as obnoxious.
Why did I think you had the DJI ones?
I thought about getting them, but I never ended up picking them up.
Okay. Maybe that was it. Maybe we just talked about them once.
And then my last microphone that I have hiding here. This is probably the microphone I should be using. I used to use this. All of the audio log stuff was on this.
Oh, God. I forgot we did that. I mean, you mostly did that.
Yeah, I mostly did that. That's out there, though. You're in that.
You mostly do this, too, if we're being fair.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I just wind you up and make you draw on a whiteboard.
That's true.
This is the Audio-Technica ATR-2100, which is a combination XLR and micro USB mic. I love this thing. It was
cardioid.
Good. Yep. I should have...
Have we said cardioid yet? Cardioid, supercardioid, hypercardioid. Have we talked about what that means?
No,
those, okay. So that is the pickup pattern. You'll see it graphically displayed. That's going to determine kind of what the cone of sound it's willing to pick up is in front of you.
Yeah.
So cardioid, supercardioid, hypercardioid. As the superlative increases in intensity, the pickup pattern narrows.
Yeah. If so you have a Blue Yeti, you can see it on the back. There's a little selector switch that shows you.
And the Blue Yeti will also do like a figure eight, where it's going to pick up on both sides, because it's got the AKG has a similar diaphragm position to that, where it's just like a disc hanging out up in the middle,
and it's like
vibrating, it's got two sides, so it can sound coming from either direction can hit that diaphragm and movement, as opposed to one that's going to have like just metal behind it to keep that from happening. So that can get you into trouble if you have reflections, but it could also save you time if you have two people, one on each side of it.
Yep. So I've been thinking about using this bad boy again, but I need to do like an entire XLR setup if I'm going to do that. And if I'm going to do that, then I'm not going to use a combo mic. I'm just going to get an actual XLR mic. So, and that's why I haven't done it.
Yeah. You've been threatening the XLR transition for a while.
I have a lot of desk space that I could put a mixer on if I wanted to.
I mean, my old
dangerous territory.
Mixer was great and small. You could get the smaller version of that Yamaha that I had.
Yeah,
I have two soundboards, I guess. I have three soundboards, I guess, technically.
You have three.
Four. Yep. Four? I have four.
Ooh, okay.
One of them is non-functional, and it's one that we found 20 years ago.
Yep.
So,
okay.
But that thing's rack mountable, and it's channels. It's rack mountable light.
That sounds all right. I have this little sliver of space next to my desk that you can't. I can kind of see it right here.
Yeah.
Right next to my desk, which I think is enough space for the DBX.
Yeah. So the 286 is fine. Oh yeah, I guess we should talk about that. Like everything I do with the DBX 286S vocal processor, you can do with plugins. You can do with free plugins, and they'll probably work just as good, maybe better, probably better if you're good at it. I like turning knobs, and I like that this thing has little blinky LEDs on it that tell me when the compressor kicks in or the de-esser kicks in, and I visually can see that happening.
Yeah.
It's not like mechanically better, but it's better for the way my brain works.
Yeah. So I think that's like maybe bigger takeaway from this discussion is microphones sound different based on your voice, and spending the most money on the best microphone is not actually possibly the best thing that you can do to sound good. And also, sometimes you just do got to get the microphone or the setup for shit that makes your brain light up in a particular kind of way.
Yeah. And I do this with like the bass that I got a while ago. Because I started teaching myself how to play bass. It's a fine instrument. It's a a couple notches above entry level. Probably not quite middle of the road. But I would rather get something that I find visually appealing, that I am drawn to, that I want to pick up when I walk in the room. And I will get more utility out of that bass than a better sounding bass that costs the same money, or even that costs less money.
Yep. Yeah, same. I don't know if I have a good example of that, but I mean, I guess a similar example, right? I mentioned this earlier about using the lav mics for doing video stuff lately. And those do not sound as good as the shotgun mic does. I know this. I hear it back. I know that the shotgun mic sounds better. But because of the way a shotgun mic works, if I am even slightly off axis, if I do not have it pointed in the correct place, it is an absolute pain in the ass to make sure that I sound good on that thing. Yep. And because I don't have someone who is sitting here filming with me, I will not know until I am done recording the video if it sounds good or not.
Yeah, you don't get too far into trying to do these things before you're like, oh, that's why there's like a production crew of six people to do this kind of stuff in highly funded operations.
Yep.
And this is okay. This is something I wanted to get into a bit in our other during one of our other talks. Whenever we got like the idea of art is rarely perfect the first time.
Mm-hmm.
How I want to pull Nick into this too at some point. But cognitively, we are creating things now with tools that we have access to that this would have been like a $40,000 setup or some nonsense not that long ago. Like when we were children, this was not doable by a guy in a basement with very little knowledge.
Yes.
And I guess how do you handle like... knowing that you have access to the gear to make a perfect thing or a nearly perfect thing. And on top of that, there are other people who have the same gear who are producing a perfect thing.
Yeah.
Does that fuck with your head the way it fucks with mine?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And it only gets worse for me. Because so this light right here that I'm looking at, I just bought this last week.
Oh, yeah.
This is the first time I'm running this thing.
We're doing lights now. Let's go.
Yeah, we're switching to the lights. So this is the same Neewer CB100, I think. So it's a 130-watt light. It's a RGB light. Both of them are RGB. You can see the blue wash on the back here. This one that I'm looking at, it is an octagonal softbox. It's only a 22-inch, I think. But back to your original question about like how that makes me feel knowing that I can make a perfect thing. I would like to have another one because a little production insight here. If you look over my head right here.
Oh, yeah.
You can see
that line.
A thing. Yep. This is the shadow from the light hitting my curtains.
Sure is.
Now that I pointed it out.
Three-point light setup.
Yeah, I do not have a three-point light setup. I have...
Or at least two.
I have... So the blue wash is over here. That's another CB100. And then I have the softbox here. And then I have this practical hue lamp right behind me. So if I was doing this properly, I would have another light slightly over this way that would be coming in this way, hitting the back there, and making, like, deleting that little bad like stuff there.
My two.
Yeah, exactly. But I am also...
I have way more space than you.
Yes, I'm a foot and a half off the wall over here. So you can see the corner of the wall there. I don't have room to put another light there. And
no.
This shelving unit goes up to the ceiling. But to answer your question, now that I have this light, I got this cool softbox up here. I can make a more perfect thing now.
Yeah.
I can get even closer to having a perfect thing. So now... when I was using just one light, literally last week, I was grumpy and annoyed that I could not get the light the way that I wanted it to look.
Yep.
And now I have two lights.
Now you have two lights.
So I should be able to get it to look how I want it to look, right?
What if you had just like four lights, though?
Yeah, what if I had four? And so I will constantly nitpick this stuff when I'm like in the edit trying to find like trying to make the video and everything because I can see when I'm blown out.
Oh,
I can
you can't see. Unsee it.
No, you can't unsee it.
Oh.
And so
yeah.
you just have to live with it. And then, you know, the thing that I fall back on is that I certainly have as much gear as a lot of the people who are making perfect things. But I know that they don't think they're perfect because they wouldn't have all that gear if they needed it to look perfect.
Yeah. So they have... also don't see like the behind the scenes setup usually.
Oh,
sometimes, yeah. Sometimes like visually you're seeing a thing. You're like, oh, that's like they have like three lights.
Yeah.
And it's like, actually they have seven.
Yeah.
You can't tell because you don't have the background knowledge to know, or at least that's been my experience so far.
Yeah. No, totally. I recently watched, this will come up in our YouTube book club.
I recently rewatched the I don't know James Rolfe video from Folding Ideas.
I love it so much. We're doing an episode on that at some point.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I don't want to burn it early because I don't think I'm good enough yet.
No, we'll work up to it. It's a very good video. You should go watch it. It's a video about how Dan Olsen from Folding Ideas doesn't know James Rolfe and just let the rest of it come from there. The angry video game nerd. But the important part here is there's a bit in that video where they are dissecting, Dan Olsen, the guy making the video, is dissecting the behind the scenes video that James Rolfe, the angry video game nerd, does.
Yeah, about with the light stands.
Yes.
Craft wire to the ceiling. And
yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just like an actual chaotic thing of having like light stands to the ceiling because, you know, this beautiful, this manicured look that he is going for works on film. And then you just like take a step back, swing the camera around. You're like, holy shit, this is a goddamn nightmare.
Yeah.
Just like everything everywhere about to hit you in the head. And that's kind of what it feels like.
I mean, that's, we had that in theater also.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where like a thing looked fine from 35 feet away when you're sitting in the audience. But if you walked up and looked at it, like looked at it or knocked on it, you'd be like, oh, this is a bunch of taped together bullshit, huh?
Yeah.
This is all foam. You made this
out of foam. It's all held together with hinges. Who the fuck did that?
So many hinges. Why would one man have this many hinges? Yeah. It's weird. The other hang up I get there, and I'm starting to train myself out of this because I'm paying more attention to it. But like Folding Ideas, who I love, and he's kind of, he throws this off a little bit. A lot of them do, I guess. But there's a lot of these channels that I follow really closely and intently. Your Folding Ideas, your H Bomber guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that this is necessarily intentional, but passively consuming it, you get the idea that this is made by one person, start to finish, holistically.
Yes. Yep.
And almost never is that the case with them.
Correct. Yep.
At all.
Especially later. Maybe.
Yeah, especially now.
Maybe their early stuff, but...
Well, so, like, here's the thing that got me into YouTube as a place for content that's not terrible was Folding Ideas, the Flat Earth one. Why have I forgotten the name of it? In Search of
Flat Earth.
Thank you.
Yep.
Life-changing, I think, for me in some ways. I don't think that's unrealistic to say. He did all of that one. That was just him. But also sometimes like we also don't get to see the time scale.
Yes.
It's not uncommon, from what I've gathered now that I'm further into it, for a lot of these videos to take 1 to 4 years to put together because there's 1 to 4 people on it or even 10.
H Bomber Guy, as of recording, March 8th, was threatening on Blue Sky yesterday if 4 hours and 20 minutes is too long of a video to put on in a theatrical screening. For context, his last video on video game plagiarism was a year and a half ago, maybe?
Yeah.
At least? So.
Yep.
That's, and this, just...
That one was in the works for ever, in a lot of ways. Like, that's not his first video on plagiarism.
No. Yeah, like thinking that they happen in like a, you know, finish one, move on to the next one kind of time scale is also just not how these things work. Like you work on them forever and then someday they come out or don't.
Yeah. He's done a lot of peaks behind the curtain, which I know I've benefited from. So I have C-stands that I'm not using right now. Are we doing lighting? Are we calling this? Do you want to? Are we going? What are you thinking?
Let's do lighting.
How are you? Let's do lighting. Okay.
Yeah. Let's round it up. Let's do lighting.
So get good light stands. mm-hmm. you will not be upset with good light stands. You will be very frustrated with cheap light stands that tip over. And that yep. is the thing I think I assumed from my other production experience, but it's something he specifically said in one of his behind the curtain videos that yep. I've taken to heart. Like I have, should I grab some light stands? So we know what a good light stand is and a shitty light stand is.
Yeah. I will say as you go get these, I do have shitty light stands. I bought as part of an older project I was working on, I needed softbox for product photography. And so I have giant fluorescent, I don't have them here, but I have giant fluorescent softboxes that like literally the bulbs are about 9 inches long. They came on the single shittiest light stand I've ever used. There are the little guys that, you know, they telescope out and then they kind of have segments that pop up. They are of the quality, I would say, like Walmart quality. Not great, sufficient. They do what they need to do. Every single time I use them, I was afraid they were going to fall over. The stands that these ones are on, this softbox and then this other wash here, are on the tripod mounts for actually the backdrop that Logan has, I suspect. These go much higher, so I can get this softbox to kind of come down like this in a dramatic kind of fashion. But annoyingly, they have the most insane bolt on the top, which does not take a this is my mundane fact. Did you know the thing on top of a light stand, the mm-hmm. you know, like the metal part that then has like a little bit of threading on top, that yeah. thing has a name?
Sure.
It's called the spigot stud. Why? Huh. Why do they name it that?
They stole your high school nickname for the yeah. light stand thing. That's weird. Yeah.
But that's what it's called. But these light stands that I'm using, which are not light stands, they're backdrop stands, do not have one. And they come in 25 by 64. Yeah, that. Spigot stud. They come, the threading on those bolts are 25 by 64, 18 threads per inch, which is insane. No one has ever used a screw like that before. I don't know why they did, but they did. So I fixed it by, I just 3D printed a thing to put on top of it. The 3D printer is my new favorite gizmo, has been since I bought it last April. It's incredible. So now I can mount these lights on top of those stands, which means my old stands that only went about 5 feet up, these can go all the way up to the ceiling if I needed them to. So I could actually, if I had a umbrella or something, I could crane them over and get a good top-down light, which I do not yeah. have, but I could if I wanted to. These are bad light stands, though.
Do you know how tall they are, like, advertised?
No.
Like sevens or eights. Or
probably like 10 foot, I think.
I think here's the thing I
10 by 12s.
Want to be a takeaway for light stands.
Mm-hmm.
Is your advertised height on a light stand like this is going to be, with all of these things,
fully extended. Yep.
And it's a sloppy tippy bitch when,
sure is.
when they are fully extended.
Yep.
You'll do a lot better if they're like, I don't know, 10% down.
Yep.
So don't look at the advertised number as like the functional height. That's yep. like your lab setting height. That's your... If there's no winds and assume a perfectly spherical frictionless cow sort yep. of thing. So don't, yeah, get a don't taller light stand than you think you need. But also keep in mind that that's per segment. So this light stand I have here, which came with my RGB panels, which I'm not using currently or maybe ever more. We'll see.
Oh.
I've got other RGB fixtures now. Those were
like you don't
so
need
I picked
them,
up
right?
some like yeah. I mean, I'll if I switch and use the white backdrop, I'll probably still use them for wash on that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're little. I think they're 9x9s, square RGB yep. panels. They were cheap. I got them because I missed playing with colored lights, and I wanted to play with.
And those
colored
have
lights
barn
again.
Doors, right?
They have barn doors, and I now have soft boxes for them also.
Okay.
Because they're, yeah, they're GVM, Great Video Maker is the brand, which they seem to produce a better product than you'd expect from that name, but not entirely.
Yeah.
I think they're decent entry-level stuff. Those are another one that I got on a very silly sale at one point. Like, all this stuff, I spend a lot of time looking at gear. You know this. Like,
yes.
Way more than anyone would expect. Like, I'll decide I want a thing, and it'll be sometimes 18 months before I buy one. Not that I haven't spent a lot of money on these. I have, but not as much as you would maybe expect by looking at all of it. So, yeah, these guys are fine. They're fine. They're fine depending on weight. But the weight of your fixture is going to matter a lot on how these perform. I use only LEDs now, continuous LEDs. Mm-hmm. And I believe that is what you are using.
Yep. These are both LEDs.
So if you're doing video, you're going to use continuous lighting. You don't need strobes or flashes because you're not taking still images. So that would, it would be confusing. You can look at fluorescents. Sometimes they're cheaper. Then you have to deal with bulbs and glass. You can look at HMI. Those are really expensive. You can look at tungsten. Tungsten filament stuff is what we use before LEDs were good. That's like all of our old theater lights that we worked with. Those were all tungsten. But you're going to have a lot of logistical problems there, potentially. They get hot. Like, fuck off hot. Like, scary hot. I'm terrified of house fires. I don't buy those. Like, they're hot enough that if you tip one over, it's going to mess up your carpet if you're lucky.
Yeah. Like, they're hot enough to where the radiant heat on them would start to melt gels that were several inches away from them. Like, they will they will mess you up. Many a hand burn I have got
handling those. They're good at throwing out light, but they're also good at throwing out excess heat. So I went with LEDs. The cost and the quality has become much better. Not that tungsten lights are bad by any stretch, but for me, like, I would be sweating bullets down here if these were all by now.
Yeah, and like even the softbox, like when I'm recording for a while, I have both of the windows in my office open. It is 40 degrees outside. A PC and this light coming down on me is enough to like heat up this room. So, and that's LEDs. Like, that is not I can't feel
much heat at all.
But it is enough.
So yeah, these came with those little light panels, and then I have like my beefiest light stand over here. Oh, this is a big heavy boy that I bought.
Ooh, I like that one.
Here's your comparison. And the weight is not comparable. Like, I could bend this if I needed to. It wouldn't be easy, but I could do it. I don't think I could do that with this.
No.
But like, I got these for my 300 watt fixtures, which I don't even have up right now. So you probably don't need this unless you're getting big fixtures made of metal.
Yep.
I would recommend like maybe get one notch beefier than you think you need if possible.
Yeah.
But not two.
Yeah. That tracks. Also, like, a lot of this is going to be, like, you should get, the ethos is 70% complete as I speak directly to the camera.
Yeah.
Buy good shit.
Dear listener, buy good shit. If you can. Yeah, I started with, I've used a lot of cheap gear. I've used a lot of old gear.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not an existential problem to upgrade a little bit, usually that will pay itself off considerably in post-production, or even just tearing shit up down and putting it back up.
Yes.
You mentioned softboxes. Let's talk about softboxes real quick, and we'll talk about why you want to spend just a little bit more money. So I grabbed a softbox because you mentioned an octagonal softbox, and I have a real small one that'll work on camera. for my little lights, which we'll talk about the fixtures in a second. Yeah. This is not a Bowens adapter. This is small. It's called an FM mount. It's specific to Nanlight. It's proprietary to them. It's a Bowens adapter, but it's just a little guy instead of a big guy.
Okay.
Do your softboxes have integrated rings and adapters, or are they separate? Like, are the little tent poles permanently affixed? Okay. So that's not how all softboxes are.
I don't know if I can replace them or not. Maybe.
I wonder if I have just a Bowens adapter laying around. Let me look for a Bowens adapter real quick. I know I have one.
For the audience, a Bowens adapter is a, it is a type of standardized-ish way to mount attachment things to light fixtures. So especially for something, when we talk about buying gear, Logan has mostly Nanlite fixtures. I have mostly Neewer fixtures. For the most part, and it sounds like maybe Nanlite not so much, but for the most part, light fixtures can be interchangeable with the things that you buy from them or buy for them, like softboxes, snoots, spotlights, things like that, because they attach via a pretty standard method called a Bowens mount. There's also a mini Bowens, so, you know, keep an eye on that stuff. But yes, that's how things attach.
Here you can see the size difference, but so this inner piece has these three studs, which is the same as this little FM mount, but smaller. So those slot in, and then this turns, and it clicks into place. Yeah. But if you look at this, it's got all these
little mounting holes. Yeah.
Yeah. So if your softbox does not have an integrated adapter, like this one does, when I want to take this thing apart, if I can remember how to do it, I just pull some tension on this thing, and I flip this little switch, and I do that as I go around.
Yep.
And then eventually you can just fold this thing up like it's an umbrella, kind of. Ta-da. And then it gets small. But these things are still here. And when I want to make it big again, I just have to work my way around and open all these up.
Does it not work that way on other ones?
Oh, this is a feature, my friend. This is not a standard. So,
mine also does that. It just has a one button instead of doing it individually. I didn't realize you have to build the umbrella every time.
Yeah. So the first large rectangular softbox I bought. These are things I should not have bought, but I didn't know at the time.
Is this the 78-inch one that you got?
No. No, that one's integrated. I don't buy non-integrated. I have exactly one softbox that does not have an integrated fucking adapter in it, and I will not buy another one. So you have these little holes, and you saw the little poles that I pulled open on that thing. For a real big softbox, I mean, the one that doesn't have the adapter that I have is a big rectangular one. Like, it might be 72. No, it's not 72. It's probably 60 inches tall, though. Like, it's a big SOB. You need to put it together like it's a Coleman tent from the 70s.
Oh, that's
not good. You have a fiberglass rod that needs to go into a pocket in the corners of the softbox.
Yep.
And then you need to get the other end of that thing into one of these holes. And you have to hope that the geometry of these holes is kind of close enough to make the corners where you need the corners to go. But also, those things have to be really tight. So the poles aren't they'll just barely do it. You have to wrench on those things in a way that you're like, oh, if this snaps, it goes in my eye and I die. This is not ideal. The first, as an entire complete novice, the first time I put that rectangular softbox together, I think it took me over an hour.
Jesus.
To get it up and then back down. If I count just the time putting it together and the time taking it apart, at least an hour. It might have been significantly more. I don't know. It got faster subsequent times. But it was not long before there were things that I was trying to produce where I was like, oh, I need that rectangular softbox. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm not doing it.
What if I didn't?
I'm not. What if I can't? I don't have the emotional fortitude to fight this tent right now.
Yep.
Like, I guess I'm not going to do the thing today because I'm not putting this damn softbox together.
Yep.
So there's a good example of, like, if you can spend a little bit extra money to get the thing that's built together, like, the shitty thing here is if this breaks, this whole thing sucks now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where if a pole on this thing breaks, you get another pole for, like, free, basically. Like,
yeah.
Like, close to $0. And then you move on with your life. But if it's so frustrating to manipulate that you don't want to produce the thing you wanted to produce because you have to interact with your gear, then it's functionally useless anyway.
Yep. Yep.
So,
yeah, I didn't know that.
If you're going to get soft boxes, get integrated rings.
Yeah.
So, Namlite does use Bowens adapters. This is small because it's for my very small lights, which I would very much recommend to these lights. I don't recommend a lot of things. I've had great luck with these so far. I think I love them.
Those are the cute little guys, almost
perpetually
right?
on sale. Yeah, I'll just take this one down and grab it.
This would be a good test for how good those softboxes are working and if one can tell the difference. Oh, lights off. A softbox, I guess, to kind of explain this a little bit from a very layman's perspective, because I am not a photographer or videographer, a softbox takes imagine a light bulb. That's a very hot pointed light that is going to shoot directed light at you, especially for continuous fixtures. They are pointed forward like a flashlight. A softbox is taking a mostly translucent, bordering on opaque, a filter of some variety, and then inside that umbrella cone is a reflective material, and what's happening is that the light is coming out of the fixture, it is bouncing all around within that umbrella cone, and it is coming out as diffuse light. So you can see this light I have right here, if I hold my hands up, you can see it's giving hot spots here, you can kind of see the directional light here that's coming off of me. That's because this light is not in flashlight mode. It is in softbox mode. So it is filling the space with a lot of diffuse light. The light behind me that you can see here has a reflector on it, which is what comes with in the normal packaging. It's, you know, it's a cone basically that points outward and it's functioning the same way. There's just not an opaque filter over it. So you're seeing this light kind of just shooting across. Yeah, the reflector. Yep, that.
Here's a little reflector. So here's what I was using to the right. I guess we'll take this as a slightly larger octagonal softbox. And we'll take this off quick.
Man, that thing's so small. Here's my little...
So this is a Namlite FC60B. This is a bicolor light. So that means it can change white balance, but it doesn't do RGB. And yeah, it is just a little guy.
Yeah.
It draws very little power, draws very little amperage. It puts out a pretty good amount of light. Yeah. But I got these because of how flexible they are and because of how small they are. So this thing, you'll see all these little ports on the back, it can be powered through USB Type-C. So this thing will work, like, in the field. You can run this off of the same power bank you'd use to charge your phone.
Mm-hmm.
It pulls a lot more power than your phone draws when it charges. So, like, I think I have a
not for long
20,000 milliamp hour or something. I don't know. I got a big beefy one that'll do it for a while. Or it runs on DC power. These also do DMX though, which is why part of the reason I got them is because I really want to get back to doing DMX controlled stuff. DMX is a communication protocol used for, I think, originally theatrical lights. At least that's my context for them. But yeah, so this, they do come with an adapter to go to a Bowens mount, but
yeah, that doesn't quite
fit. It's too big. And then for Extra Life, I had this on here.
How?
So I had a 2.2 foot lantern softbox This is before I had my octagonal ones. This is why I got these octagonal ones that are like light and small and not huge and not so heavy that it's like wrenching
this thing it down
forward off the stand. Cause that's just what I had. It comes with an adapter to go from this small size to a standard Bowens. Mm. So you run the adapter and then you run this thing, but it's just a little guy.
Yep.
You can't ask him to do that. That seems cruel.
It's not kind.
But these are not that expensive, the 60-watt ones. So if you just need to be lit for your face, you can get away with one or two of these. I don't know how long it'll last. I think it'll last a long time. It seems fine. It's a polycarbonate housing. It's not fully metal. My big 300-watt guys are metal. But these ones seem totally functional and versatile. And then, the reflector, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
I have on these RGBs.
Oh, nice. Okay. But, like, a 60-watt fixture is, like, kind of perfect, really. As I've been kind of, depending on your setup, I guess. But, like, these two lights that I'm running right now are 130-watt, I think. The product name, 100. But each of them is running at, I think the softbox is running at 3%, and the blue one over here is probably running closer to 10, because RGB light, you have to burn a little bit hotter to get the same kind of signal, just because of how light works. But I imagine
that your backdrop, that was a thing I learned.
Intense.
Was that that wattage is split across all of the color channels.
Mm-hmm.
So 120-watt RGB fixture and 120-watt bicolor fixture will not put out the same intensity of white light at the same wattage. And you also have to keep, like, the size of your softbox matters too. So I picked up some really big softboxes and I put them on these little lights, and it obviously cannot fill the softbox with lights. Anything. That's a thing I should have understood before I did it. If I thought about it a little better, but I did not.
Yeah.
Here's, I guess I'll do a quick filter. So there's nothing is on that light. My two bicolor 60 watts here are at like 40%, by the way.
Okay.
So these aren't even at. So this is with nothing on it, which is horrific. Jesus. And then
that's with a reflector.
The reflector, it is much brighter and much tighter.
Yeah.
And I think I can, I can't tell if I can feel the heat or if I just want to not be here anymore.
Sometimes it's the same. Right, grab the softbox. Throw the softbox on. It's a real combination of a moody lighting, I think, is what he was going for before, and now he can see.
I can't. Well, I could if I had not flashbanged myself.
You should have done that. That is what a softbox is for, to give mostly diffuse light to light you without blowing out your eyeballs.
Yeah, and diffuse means, like, you can see some, because of the angle, you can see some feathering on the color here. Like, it's not light and then no light. There's a little bit of gradient, and that's what the softbox is going to do. But, like, these little, how much cord do I have? Like, your lines are much harsher. This is the slightly bigger version. This is the FC120RC? Yeah, C. So 120 watt, but this one's RGB. You'll see the reflector is significantly different.
Yep.
In terms of size. This one's metal. This one's polycarb. If you can stretch to these, I would do it. But not technically necessary.
Yeah. And I guess it kind of depends on your purpose that you're going for here. I feel like when you're in a space where you are looking at people talking into microphones on the internet, oftentimes, kind of like we were talking about with microphones, there's like an aesthetic thing that is going on, and it's less for actual lighting. I think Elgato does a pretty decent job of making things that are slightly overpriced for people who don't want to think about it too much. Some of their stuff is pretty good. Their key light panels are just RGB panels that you can do something else with. Like, you just find different versions of those for slightly cheaper. They're not doing a ton different. But the thing that Logan and I have, which I think is the like gear methodology that we have, is these things are pretty extensible. So like, he can run stuff off of a power bank in the field. I can set this up for, I'm talking into a microphone mode. I can set this up for an actual like 2-point lighting setup for my video stuff. And I have a couple of other attachments that if I wanted to, I could throw, it's called a lantern softbox, which is it looks like a hot air balloon kind of. And that thing, what that does is it fills my entire room with light. And so instead of having these key point lights that you have like with my softbox right now, or with the LED panels that you would get from something like Elgato, having something that is much more extensible, something that you can throw a bunch of different attachments on, is the like the gear brain thing that we end up being in, because a lot of the shit we pick up from theater, where you buy a lens or a fixture and then you need to go use those fixtures in different ways in different places. And so being able to change coloring, which is useful for mood, yes, but it is also useful for, you will notice in, yeah, there's the lantern softbox. It shoots light outward like a softbox does, but it's not focused, which is helpful when you want to fill an entire room with light.
You can put drapes on this too. They usually come with it, so you can direct the light a little bit. Frequently, these are used overhead, out of sight.
Yep.
This is what I had on that little 60 watt guy, and it was just wrenching it.
Yeah.
So the reason I, good segue here. The reason I recommend the 120s, if you can swing it, instead of the 60s that I have, is because they have more attachment options. Mm-hmm. So Nanlite has a couple product lines. One of them is the Forza line, and those are more metal construction, more industrial use. Like, they're closer to a real life production setting.
Mm-hmm.
Then the little stuff I use in my basement here. You probably don't need a lantern softbox, but
probably not. That is a specific. I do video creation, and sometimes those videos take 4 hours, and I cannot rely on natural light for the filming conditions. So it helps me control that stuff. If you are making stuff on the internet,
one more thing.
Oh boy, you probably don't need something like that. If you're just going to be doing stuff like this. But the attachment thing is like no joke, because one of the, I think the basics of lighting that I think is what most people who sit in front of a microphone and talk on the internet understand is that that lighting is color. And color can be white, it can be daylight, it can be sunset, it can be RGB, like the gamers tend to want their light to be. But the second part of this that I think is where you start to get into fun stuff, and where you can kind of shape what you are putting out in the world a little bit more than color mood, is that you can shape light. And we were talking about barn doors earlier as a way to kind of like shape light and like lock off light in a specific way.
Fabric grids on soft boxes.
Yep. Yeah. So I have a fabric grid in my softbox, which means that the light, yep, that cool thing, which basically means that the softbox light is diffuse, but now it is being angled to be through those egg crates. So it is going through that light and it's mostly coming down straight, which is why you don't see a lot of spillover on my other stuff. But also, this light is incredibly high up and it is angled down, and that is what is making the effect on my face, unlike a Elgato key light where it might be a little bit lower down because it has to be on your desk.
I have not told you this yet, but so these something? FC-120s have a similar profile to their Forza line, which is like the expensive stuff.
Yeah.
And then there's this, the company who owns Nanlite has a couple other companies that do like real production equipment beyond Nanlite. Nanlux is that one. That's like you want to buy lights with commas in the price. That's that kind of thing. But these little 120s, since they cross over dimensionally with like their more expensive prosumer stuff, I guess we'll call it. A lot of the attachments work for both. I think I'm going to get one. But they sell that'll fit on these 120s Fresnel lenses with barn doors that'll attach on the front. GoPro holders, projectors. And then this that I got.
What is that?
It's a silicone boob.
It's a hat? I truly have no idea what that thing is for. Is that actually just a... Huh. It's quite literally a mute. That's amazing.
So it stretches... This turns your reflector into a lantern softbox, essentially.
Huh.
Is it good? You're going to spend, like, what? $80 on a lantern softbox? A new one?
Yeah.
100?
About that.
This little silicone guy was, like, $10.
Huh. Well, fuck me, I guess. Oh, yeah. Uh-oh. He's burning his hands off, folks.
There we go.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That sure as shit does it, huh?
Guy. I should probably turn that down before I put it near my face.
Yeah, that's wild. It just does the damn thing.
Can't tell on this camera anymore. But, yeah, it...
Huh.
It works pretty all right.
Yeah.
Like if we move this...
The real backdrop. The whole artifice of the set is falling apart at this point.
Yeah. This is the After Dark episode for a reason.
The After Dark.
But you get...
Yeah, so it's incredibly diffuse. And now, if you were to stand right in front of that, you have the most stereotypical three-point lighting of all time.
I mean, I've blocked a lot of it with the whiteboard.
Yeah, look at that.
Oh, maybe I do under desk lighting now.
Yeah, there you go. Underglow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's doing some weird stuff to your nose, but...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's doing a lot of weird stuff. You shouldn't do this.
You shouldn't do that. That's not the way to do it. That, a light is a sufficient but not a good idea for a space heater like that. You don't want a desk heater like that.
All right, I'm gonna
point it at the thing and then take it off, and you'll see the
transition.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's wild. I'm kind of amazed that thing works. I mean, I guess it fundamentally makes sense that you could throw a like silicon globe on the end of a light and it would basically do the same damn thing, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's we used to use diffusion gels in theatrical fixtures, and it's doing the same thing. It's just not going to melt, I hope.
Yeah, hopefully not.
But it was like $10, and it just stretches over the reflector.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah.
Should maybe look into that.
Right? No, I've been really happy with all of the Nanlite stuff I've gotten so far. Subject to change. Also, maybe they, like, grind puppies into mulch at their factory. I don't know. I haven't checked.
Sometimes it's best not to check, unless it's like...
That's why I already bought them, so...
It's incredibly overt. I think that it really... The attachment stuff there, I think, is where it really comes together for me. Like, being able to have a lighting setup that is... Like, you have your higher quality, at least, light stands that aren't a pain in the ass to put up. You have your fixtures that are pretty, like, robust, and they're built well. They're easy to use. And then you have your attachments that you can attach to them however you see fit. And even with, I mean, even with one and a practical behind me, I was doing fine. Like all of my video stuff was shot with, up to this point, was shot with that lantern and then a practical behind me. But now that I have two, like I have basically the makings of most of the good videos that you like on the internet. I could probably do most of those with the setup I have now.
Yeah. And if you're willing to like spend the time, and you have the patience for it, you can do a lot with like a $20 ring light mm-hmm. and an iPhone.
Yep.
So don't feel like spending hundreds of dollars on gear is needed or maybe even useful.
No.
It is.
Again, like I think that it really comes down to like the microphone discussion, the lighting discussion, everything is like these, the lights, the attachments, the microphones, all of that stuff. Like there are other things that you can be spending your time as a creator on the internet to make good things. Like, yes, bad audio is a really big turnoff for most people. You should get to bare minimum good audio. You can do that with a $50 to $100 microphone. You can get a ring light from Walmart and have pretty decent lighting. But if the thing that you're putting out is not good, then it doesn't really matter. And all of this other stuff is just opening up the creative space to find different ways to trick people into thinking that the thing that you're making is good.
Yeah. And for me, it's similar to the bass, where it's like, I like fiddling with this stuff.
Yeah.
And fiddling with this stuff makes me want to do this.
Yep.
In a way absolutely. That a $20 ring light wouldn't. But yeah, no, this is overkill for most levels of production, I would say probably. But I mean, also like it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like this is how you
I
have
spent time. I've always spent time messing around with lights, and then now I can do it here instead of on a stage somewhere.
Yeah.
So
now it's a hobby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's like ultimately like get something that you're going to use, like get good gear and then make sure that you use it and like find ways to use it. And I think you'll find your way to making cool stuff, which I think is the important part.
But diminishing returns. If you have not, thought about the audience that you're writing your script for specifically at all, ever, do that before you buy the $20 ring light, let alone this shit.
And
I'm not great at that all the time either, but this is at the end. Like these are not things that are going to make you like, I'm gonna drag Nick back into this 'cause he's not here. So I play guitar in the past. I guess I don't very often anymore. Nick's very good at guitar. Mm-hmm. Nick's really good at guitar. And I'm not. And I really wanted to play pinch harmonics better because playing whittly squealies are fun.
Yes, correct.
And I could not get it. I had like a cheap Washburn distortion pedal that came from Target, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it in my head of just like, oh, well, if I had a real distortion pedal, then I would be playing better squealies than I play right now. And this is very much not the case, because Nick's able to took that guitar with that pedal connected to it and played much better squealies immediately, which obviously it is technique and not gear. Almost 100% of the time.
Yeah.
But I really, it's easy to get it in your head of just like, oh, if I just had this one piece of gear, then I would have gone pro. If I just had these better lights, then I'd have 100,000 subs by now. It's almost never the case.
Yep.
So focus on your fundamental stuff first. And if you have the money and the time and the desire to fiddle with this shit, this is the shit I would fiddle with. But
yeah.
Don't,
but also that's
don't feel
that's
like
the
it's
shit
requirement.
That, yeah, that we would fiddle with.
Yeah.
Maybe not your particular flavor of fiddling.
I would do this if we weren't publishing videos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If we stop tomorrow, I'll still fuck around with, like, I use these lights while I work at my computer job. because sometimes I like working in different colored lights.
Yep.
And they make pretty good floor lamps with the softbox out of it, but being honest. That
sounds all right.
But yeah, I guess there's your like crash course on all the dumb shit I've bought
over
the last
however microphone long. Library. A community theater level of lighting.
Yeah, I have two more. Oh, I didn't. Here's the 300 watt. I guess while we're.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I think the 300 watt was probably one of the first lights that you bought, I think. I think I saw this when I was over for the Star Trek episode. And it was an amount of light that I have always been on the fence about. I have always wanted to have a 300 watt fixture in here because sometimes you can't have enough watts of light. But I am operating in my tiny office. And like I said, the softbox is on 4% right now. It turns out, I don't need 300 watts. But are you about to tell me I might?
No, absolutely I'm not. Okay. So I have a couple big rectangular softboxes that I got for other projects than shooting video real close like this. Mm-hmm. And as we discussed, if you put them on the 60-watt fixtures or even the 120-watt fixtures, they're real big, heavy things. So with the lights really light, it the counterweight's tough. But also, if your softbox is like, you know, the size of a person, that 60-watt fixture just doesn't have the juice to fill that softbox with light to make it work the way that it's supposed to work.
Yep.
And I have not seen these go on sale for as cheap as I got them since I got them. But here's your 300-watt fixture. It looks like a thing you could trap ghosts in.
It sure does.
It is. The whole thing is metal as hell. It is heavy. If I put it on that cheap stand from before, we'd all have a bad time.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the heat sink in there. It's like computer sized. Like it's. And it puts out a light for this space.
Yeah.
Some
would say too much.
Unless you know why. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some would say too much. Get these little guys that I have.
And yeah.
Don't spend your time with this if you don't know why you're getting it.
Or you are getting it to learn why, which is also
a fun way to do it. Yeah, that was part of it. But that's can be an expensive proposition.
Yeah.
I think that's all.
I think we did it.
I think we did.
It's all the lights.
Wow, we've been doing this a while, huh?
Yeah. What is that?
Look at that.
Oh, yeah. Hour 40.
Not so bad.
Whoops.